Hi, everyone, and welcome to the special simulcast of Freedom from Addiction, Truth, Justice, Bliss, Service, and the Neil Haley Show. And I'm excited to welcome the program, Reverend Wynn Henderson, MD. Wynn, how are you? And our guest today is somebody I've chatted with a few times, but I'm very interested to hear your perspective on it. Wynn, how are you?
I'm doing good. Our guest today is Mike Anthony. And I want to tell you, he's got a really interesting story for us today. Could you imagine being a bartender in a busy Broadway show when just before intermission, you get a call, your too young dad had suddenly died? As your family's screams of despair pierce your ear and instantly shatter your world, hundreds of patrons abuzz with energy from the comedic first act as they descend on you. They hastily begin ordering drinks, and somehow a shell that looks like you makes them, while inside you crumble away. How do we move forward when such a devastating loss occurs? Love, Dad, which is the name of the book, intimately shares one family's darkest hours and their road to healing, a road that has been long ignored or scoffed at by the scientific community. Mike Anthony, a healthy skeptic, goes to great lengths to uncover the paradigm-shifting research into the nature of consciousness that exists and shows us why it must be put back in the forefront with no shame attached. Mike also will tell us about his Netflix movie on this subject. This eye-opening book pushes the boundaries of what we think we know, unlocking the door to new and accelerating possibilities. What might it be like to know that death is not truly the end? In his book, Love, Dad, we get one family's answer. Mike, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Hi, it's nice to be here. Thank you.
Okay, you got quite a story. And this story, in part, was on a Netflix special, right?
That's right. Yeah, there's a 6-part documentary series called Surviving Death. And this parts of the story are featured in 3 of those episodes.
Great. Okay, so give us a brief overview of how this initially got started. You got a call from somebody saying that they had been in contact with your dad, right?
That's right. My dad suddenly passed, you know, out of nowhere. From our perspective, we thought he was in great shape and had a long time yet to live at 60 years old. He suddenly passed. And then just days after the funeral, a phone call came into the house with a message from a woman who claimed to be a medium, a woman who'd never met my father or my family, a complete stranger, claiming that my dad was contacting her, desperate to get a message to us that he was okay.
Okay. For our listening audience, define what is a medium?
A medium is a person who claims the ability to sense in some way our deceased loved one. So they either they can see things sometimes, see images in their mind's eye, so to speak, or taste things sometimes, or feel things. Basically, the bottom line is they're claiming they're getting messages from our deceased loved ones that they're then relaying to us.
You talk about mediumship. What does mediumship mean? Is that something different?
No, that's the process that a medium, is a part of. They are the medium, so to speak, between the spirit world and our world.
We've seen in the past some television on medium and mediumship, like Crossing Over with John Edward and the Long Island Medium. Is this similar to those people? And how it related to your story?
Yeah, that's pretty much exactly what it is. The person who contacted my family does what John Edward and the Long Island medium does. That was her claim, yes.
Okay. Did you evaluate her claim to find out whether you thought it was authenticity positive, or did you just accept it on face value?
No, I don't accept much at face value. I'm a person who requires definite evidence before I'm going to believe something. Of course, I wanted to believe her. I mean, we were, again, this was right after the funeral. We are in a deep, dark hole of grief. So, of course, I desperately wanted to believe, but I was going to need a lot of evidence.
Okay. What evidence did you get that supported the belief that she actually was in contact with your father?
Well, she said a couple of things that I couldn't understand how she could know. You know, she was saying a couple of things that are not published in any obituary or on Facebook or anything. So the main thing about my conversation with her was that she seemed to me to be a totally sane, kind woman. She seemed like a person who was compassionate and truly believed that she was doing something genuine. So that was the main evidence from that first experience, was that I was dealing with a person who seemed to be completely sane to me, and with her heart in the right place. But the real evidence would not come until we hired a professional evidential medium, which is what she calls herself. And that's when some things started to happen that were really hard to explain.
Can you tell us about some of those things?
Sure. Yeah. The main thing is I tested her by coming up with a code word. So I was standing in my father's house all by myself. And I said, okay, Dad, I need you to give me this very specific message if this is real. And as I was trying to come up with a message, I was suddenly flooded with the memory of when I was a child. My dad would help my sister and I fall asleep by playing with our hair at night. And he would have to do it for hours because we'd say, you know, five more minutes, Dad, five more minutes. So the poor guy would play with our hair until we fell asleep. And I'm flooded with this memory for whatever reason. And I said, okay, Dad, that's it. If this is real, when she comes tonight, I need you to get her to mention my hair. So she comes to the house a couple of hours later and does this reading, and everything she's saying is very accurate. And most of it is stuff that's not published anywhere. For instance, she quoted a conversation that my sister and I had the day before. So we were by midway through this thing weeping. My family is weeping in the living room because we're convinced that she's doing something real, which was shocking to me because I was certain that science, you know, I had, grown up loving science, had intended to be a high school science teacher. And I was certain that one of my science teachers or professors in college would have told me about this stuff if this is real. I couldn't believe that it would have escaped my notice, that something of this nature, this profound, would have not gotten through to us somehow. But anyway, so we're all crying, and as she's wrapping up to leave, she looks right at me, and in the middle of a sentence, she was saying something else, and she stopped and said, "Your dad wants to talk about your hair." And that one really blew me away.
So,
yeah, wow. This is just amazing to think about. And are you a skeptic of this win? Because again, I've had Mike on my show, and the lights did flicker during the interview. And, so are you a skeptic of what Mike's telling you right now?
No, not at all. You know, I've been investigating near-death experiences for many years now, and have had contact with some of the people in the world who know about more near-death experiences than anybody else. And after you hear the variety of what people have to say when they die and come back, It's hard to discount that. So yes, I totally believe it. And so Mike, talk about scientific studies. I think that scientists have a narrative that they're trying to push that this is not real. Right. This is not accurate and everything. And that might be reason why they don't want people like yourself and me to get the word out that we have experiences that back up the fact that consciousness is there even after a person is dead. Oh, do you know any scientific studies that have been done on this?
Yeah, I was really surprised to when I really started to look into this, because I started getting positive results after I was testing a medium myself. I started to do my own casual experiments by bringing total strangers to this medium to see if she could do what she did with us when I knew there was no way she could be Googling anything. And she was getting this information time and time again. So then I was very surprised to find that serious research into mediumship had been going on for over 100 years. Some of the most renowned scientists of their day, especially at the late 1800s, early 1900s, when mediumship was really in its heyday, looked into this stuff. Some of them spent decades researching it, decades. A guy named William James, for instance, who was the founder of the psychology department at Harvard University, he spent 20 years studying a woman named Lenora Piper, who was a medium up in New Hampshire. And he came away absolutely convinced that something was happening that science could not explain. He was unequivocal about it. This woman was doing something we could not explain. And then there have been modern studies as well at the University of Virginia, the University of Arizona. There's current research happening by a wonderful scientist named Dr. Julie Beischel at the Winbridge Research Center. And all of these studies have come away with positive results that, they call it, to make it more of an antiseptic term, they call it anomalous information reception. And all three studies have confirmed that something is, that information is being transferred in some way that current materialist science does not allow for.
Right. And scientists in general are part of the secular community that don't hold too much with religion. And so they have a different agenda that they want to promote. And that's why that they don't want to let these studies out, in my opinion. But you and other people, hundreds of people that I have interviewed talked to with other researchers in the field and everything, indicate that it is a real thing that happens to these people, these after-death experiences. And so bottom line, after all your study and research and everything, What did you get out of this experience with your father?
Well, I ended up having an experience with something called physical mediumship, which is a different form of mediumship. We've been talking about mental mediumship. In physical mediumship, as the name implies, something physical is involved. So an event will happen in the room that is not subjective in nature. Something will happen that everyone can see and hear and be a part of. So it either happens or it does not happen. And I won't go into the whole thing because it's better if you build up to it by reading the rest of the book, because it's going to be out there for a lot of people. But the bottom line is I had an experience that proved to me beyond the shadow of a doubt, as I was sitting beside a journalist, a very respected journalist who also saw this and also wrote about it in her own book, Surviving Death. This experience proved to me that no matter how intelligent a scientist is, no matter how reputed they are or how many awards they've won, if they tell you that there is no such thing as anything paranormal, if they tell you that consciousness is created by the brain and is stuck inside the brain, they are wrong about that. They're simply wrong about that. There are no two ways about it. And for me to know that, it's an incredibly liberating feeling to be able to, you know, we surrender our intellectual autonomy, I think, fairly easily. If someone has a lab coat on and some letters behind their name and they tell us what the quote unquote truth is, it's easy to believe what they say is the ultimate truth. But I now know that, and this is such a fundamental, the thing that I'm have become aware of, and this thing that I've seen, it's such a fundamental aspect of nature. It's such a game-changing thing. So if science is wrong about that, then what else is science wrong about?
Exactly. Yeah, that's such a great point you're making. And how do you, Mike, make sure? Here's the problem, I think, that, and again, I'm devout Catholic, and they say that you shouldn't, and in the Bible it also says you shouldn't believe in these things, mm-hmm. and that they're evil. So that, how do you kind of transform that fact? It's not true. They've never said it's not true that these things exist, but you shouldn't believe in them.
Yeah. In my mind, what I'm trying to get past the question of belief, and that's where the scientific method comes in. As far as what this all means spiritually, and is it quote unquote evil in some way or not, that's way beyond where I am. I'm trying to drag the mainstream scientific community just far enough over to see that this stuff happens before we get to the question of what it exactly means. So that's where I am, is some of this stuff does not require belief. I mean, it's in the data, it's in statistics. The same math that told us how gravity works is also telling us that mediumship is a real thing. If you do the statistical analysis that is being done in these studies, that it's the same math that we have used to figure out other mysteries of the universe, is telling us that this is a part of the universe.
So, Mike, I have done lots of shows and on near-death experience from some of the primary researchers in the world. And I had an experience last time that I had a show with you.
Yes.
I'm coming up on 1,000 shows, and we talked about something that was not very favorable to Satan. And out of 1,000 shows, this has never happened to me before, but your show got lost off of my computer without me doing anything about it.
Yeah.
And I, being a Christian minister, have to point the finger at Satan for doing that, because he didn't want that information out because it didn't benefit him. Hmm. And what I'm talking about is Howard Storm. And I know that you know a little bit about Howard, but of most of all the interviews I've done, they've been neutral or positive for near-death experience. Mm-hmm. But Howard's case, no. So Howard was a writer, a painter, an art department professor at Northern Kentucky University. And he took a bunch of his students to France to go on a field trip and everything. And he was also a very devout atheist and tried to give this theory of worldview of religion to all his students. Well, he had a duodenal, that's the upper part of the intestine, perforation on that trip. The surgeon couldn't get to him for practically a day to do that, and he died. And the story picks up with some humanoid type creatures taking him out of the hospital and down a dusty road somewhere and being mean to him. And he thought, well, you know, maybe I made a mistake. And he, I won't give you the whole story because you can hear it on my podcast. Just go to Howard Storm or to his website, which is howardstorm.com. It's a remarkable story. And the bottom line was that he was rescued from this bad near-death experience and put back to life. Subsequently, he went to seminary and for a number of years was the pastor of a church. But this is just one example, and it's not a typical example because most people that die don't have this experience. But I just wanted to mention it because if you go over to the my podcast, which is www.freedomfromaddiction.libsyn.com, you can find out about Howard Storm. So do you have anything to say about Howard and his experience?
I'm familiar with it. Yeah. And as you said, so near-death experiences are becoming more and more common, right? As we get better and better at resuscitating people, we now have defibrillators, you know, in every restaurant, pretty much. I myself have been involved in two resuscitations working at the theater that I work at. And in one of those cases, one of the men had a near-death experience and saw us there trying to resuscitate him. So yeah, in Howard's story, he had, what began as a negative experience. And as you said, that's those are a small percentage typically of the ones reported. They're probably underreported because people, for whatever reasons, might be embarrassed, more embarrassed about discussing negative near-death experiences. But what's interesting to most interesting, I guess, to science, of course, to people who have near-death experiences, it's the most profound thing that has ever happened to them. It typically changes their lives forever and for the better. But to science, what are most interesting are veridical NDEs, which are near-death experiences wherein something happens that can be verified. So a person comes out of their body, they witness what's happening in the operating room, and then in the best cases, let's say they go down the hallway and they maybe go to the waiting room and they hear conversations that their families are having word for word, and they can report things that have happened when we know they're dead because they might be hooked up, for instance, to an operating room table. They're having an operation, they go into cardiac arrest, and so they're hooked up to all of the monitoring equipment, so we know exactly what time they're dead, and they have these experiences that they report on afterwards. And there's just no way, obviously, that in the mainstream scientific paradigm, there's no way that they could be having any of the perceptions that they have. So I find near-death experiences, particularly of the veridical variety, to be really fascinating.
Well, I've been told that there's over a million near-death experiences that have been reported. And the idea that a scientist could say there's no validity to that.
Yeah.
Is just
it's crazy. It's crazy. And as Mike talked about being a science teacher, this is just shocking for you because you would definitely have never thought you'd think this, right, Mike? Not a million years.
Yeah. I mean, I just definitely thought that if this sort of evidence was available, somebody would have taught me about it. Like right in biology class, right after teaching me about cell division and, you know, mitosis, they would have said, oh, and by the way, some people after they die have perceptions while outside of their body. And in some cases, like for instance, people who are blind from birth have had near-death experiences that are visual in nature. There's a whole book by a guy named Dr. Kenneth Ring from the University of Connecticut that focuses on these case studies. I mean, that line of evidence alone, that people blind from birth, in some cases with an ocular nerve not even connected to their brain, have visual perceptions while out of body, that alone totally shatters the mainstream scientific materialist paradigm.
Mike, I think that in addition to what you're talking about, we can see a correlation in this whole mess with the coronavirus pandemic. People are trying to promote a certain way of thinking about it, which is not necessarily scientifically based, and they want to not let scientific evidence out so that they can continue to promote a different narrative. And, you know, whether it be NDE or coronavirus, that's something that we as individuals have a responsibility to scientifically check out ourselves and to find out the real information on what's happening, because not everything that you hear on the news is correct.
Yeah, I mean, that's the main thing that this whole journey has given me. The main thing that I've taken away is that you cannot necessarily trust what the quote unquote authorities tell you, because time and again, those authorities have been wrong. All the way going back, you know, goes back to people, you know, not willing to look into Galileo's telescope, right? And because they did not want to believe what he was seeing or saying, and they wanted to stick to what they had, you know, their previous beliefs. And this has happened time and again throughout our history, that that the truth has been, the quote unquote truth has been upended. So that's my main message to people, is to, you know, don't give up your own intellectual authority. You know, use it to gather the information and figure out what the truth looks like to you.
Absolutely. And so, Mike, tell us a little about your book, how you get it, your website, any kind of information that you want passed on to the general public.
Sure. The book is called Love, Dad, How My Father Died, Then Told Me He Didn't. You can find that book and the first book I wrote, Life at Hamilton, at my website, which is mikeanthony.com. And both are available on amazon.com. And the documentary series called Surviving Death is available now on Netflix.
Did I hear that you were also doing some additional filming, or was that not something that's...
Yes, I had been working on my own documentary when the Netflix series came along, but I think that we're going to pick that back up again at some point over the following year.
Well, they can continue to follow you on the internet and see what you're into and what's happening.
Yes, yeah, we'll have some clips up on the website as we go along. Yes,
great. Well, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you again. And I hope that Satan doesn't take this one down.
Yes. Thank you so much for having me.
Okay.
All right, guys. That was a fantastic Truth Just Below the Surface and the Neil Haley Show. I appreciate it, Mike, for stopping by. And thanks again, Wynn. And take care, guys.
Bye-bye.